Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, about a week ago on Valentine's Day, I received a DM and I thought it was going to be like a cute, hey, be my Valentine's Day, or like a hey girl DM. But I look at the preview and this DM was wild and I immediately open it. And it said something like, hi, I recently found out about my grandmother's brother's case. And it was a little bit vague. And apparently, this girl, her granduncle had been found guilty of murdering a lady in a chicken coop. And this is extremely specific. This isn't like some vague thing. And so I take the name and I ran with it. And like any good child of the internet, I immediately Google the name. Okay, first nothing. And then I Google the name that was given. And chicken coop murder. And we have a Wikipedia page detailing one of the most tragic murders I've heard of. Hi, I'm Teddy, and welcome to A Briefcase. Today, we are covering the murder of Tan Hui-ying. This case, like many stories, start in a small kampong, in a small village, when Tan Hui-ying met Lim Lai Hock. Now, they were both born in 1960, so they were around the same age. Hui-ying was a sweet person. Her parents had 7 children, and she was the 5th, and her family, most of them were fishermen. She got on well, and she would often go out and fish with her father. And when one of her eldest sisters died, every day after fishing with her dad, she would go back and continue taking care of her late sister's 3 children, her nieces and nephews. And on the other hand, while Hui-ying was sweet and kind and good to her family, it seems that Lai Hock, he had a history of being a little bit of a violent man. He would pick fights with his family members, his colleagues. He was very, very quick to quarrel. And it is said that at one point of time, he even smashed a chair over his sister's back, causing a permanent spinal injury. So very different people. And I think this is something that isn't talked about a lot. Whenever we think about domestic violence, we usually think about some sort of spousal violence and sometimes parent-to-child violence. But I don't think a lot of people actually talk about like sibling violence. And I will say that there are a lot of shitty siblings in Singapore. I mean, I'm sure there are more great siblings out there than shitty siblings. But, you know, this does happen and sometimes even enabled by parents or parent. And it got to the point where he used to attack his sister, and this includes kicking and punching her at random, and he claimed that he even used a knife before. So, very different people, very, very different people. But of course, I am very sure that he kept it well hidden, because, you know, abusers never start abusive, because if not, nobody would ever date them at all or even like hang out around them. Now, even though they grew up in the same kampong, the same village, they ended up spending more time together in 1983 because Hui-ying, she starts working at Lai Hock's mom's canteen business. And now they kind of knew each other, but they ended up getting really close. Hui-ying was paid around $3 to $6 for her work in the canteen. But when Lai Hock was trying to court her, when he was really trying to date her, it is said that he would give her anywhere between $10 to $50 each time they went on a date because he felt like she was being paid too little. So now they start dating and it is said that Hui-ying was the one who wanted to keep it a secret. She didn't want her parents to know that she was dating Lai Hock, especially since they did not like him. And so they ended up meeting regularly at a chicken coop, at an egg hatchery. Now, at this point of time, there weren't any obvious red flags, not that we can tell so far retrospectively anyway. And in fact, she was the one who was, I would say, a little bit more red flaggy because she didn't want to meet him in public. And Lai Hock was getting really frustrated that they could only meet in private, that they could not go out on public dates, that they could only meet in secret. But that does not excuse the fact that Lim Lai Hock, he had a second girlfriend. He was also dating a hairdresser, T, Madam T, who was about a year younger than them. Now, Lai Hock and Hui Yin, they end up breaking up about 9 months after getting together. And when they broke up, Hui Yin actually asked him, she was like, Lai Hock, tell me, do you like have another girlfriend? And he was like, no, of course not, never. And he was like, oh, I just don't think we're compatible. But it wasn't a particularly clean break, you know, because it seems that they kept hooking up. They would meet up, they would joke around, and they would hook up. And Lai Hock would be like, oh, I couldn't help myself. And even when he moved in with his hairdresser girlfriend, Madam T, and later even when he got married in March 1989, for about 6 to 7 years, they would continue hooking up. And during this time, he would become a carpenter and they would continue meeting. And on Fridays, he would actually go back to his home, to his Punggol family home, and he would hook up with Hui Yin in his old childhood home. And it does seem a little bit dodgy that this dude would go and pray and then afterwards go and cheat on his wife. But you know, fine. This was not the worst thing that Lim Lai Hock would do. We're going to fast forward to 12th of October 1990, so about 34 years ago. Hui Yin left her family home at about 1:10 p.m. in the afternoon. She walked about 20 minutes to her brother-in-law's house in Buangkok South Farmway. She spent the afternoon babysitting her late sister's children, and then after that, she left the house at about 6:30 p.m., 6 hours later. This would be the last time she was seen alive. Now, the reality is that we don't know what happened to her after leaving her home. What we do know is that her body was found 4 days later on 16th of October 1990. Now, at that point of time, Punggol hadn't been really developed yet. It isn't as you see it today. It wasn't as urban. There weren't like a lot of HDBs, and there were definitely still kampongs. For a while, the government had slowly been moving Singaporeans from kampongs into modern HDB flats and afterward redeveloping the land. And at that point of time, I think there was some controversy about this, about the price of the land sold. And I can't imagine that all Singaporeans, especially older Singaporeans who may have spent their entire lives living in the kampong, being like too happy to move. But that's like a whole different thing. We digress. That is to say, there was a reason why now there were two contractors who were sent to inspect the abandoned chicken hatchery in Punggol. The chicken coop that Hui Yin and Lim Lai Hock used to meet in, because they were looking to redevelop that area of land. And on 16th October 1990, that's when they find her body. Singapore is an extremely hot, extremely humid place, and at the end of the day, it is a tropical island with everything that comes along with it. That is to say, when they discovered her, she was already badly decomposing. She was found in a pool of blood with the seat of a chair covering her head. Some sources say a chair covering her head, and she had a total of 11 injuries, but her main cause of death was blunt force injury to her head that caused the skull fractures that led to her death. She was found with her shirt rolled up, exposing her chest and partially naked. And because of the position that she was found in, the police believed that she had been sexually assaulted either before or after her death. But because her body had been decomposing for days in the tropical humid heat, the police were not able to identify if she had indeed been assaulted. Now, what happened to Lim Lai Hock when all of this was happening? He went home and he told his wife that he was being chased by illegal loan sharks. and that they had to leave Singapore because of loan sharks. They would come for him. And before they left Singapore, when they left Singapore, he actually bought a big-ass hat to cover his face to keep him from being recognized if someone saw him. Their first stop after leaving Singapore was Madam T's parents' home in Muar, Johor, which actually isn't too far from the Singapore border. And for some reason, Lai Hock didn't feel too safe staying with his wife's family. Could it be because Lim Lai Hock was actually also violent with his wife? It is said that in 1987, apparently she had asked him to go out and get chicken rice for her one day, but the chicken rice shop was closed. And honestly, that probably wasn't even her fault because back then they didn't have Google Maps, they didn't have Instagram to announce that they would be closed for that particular day. But he was so angry that when he came back home, he pulled her hair and he punched her because she had the audacity to make him go out for nothing even though she didn't know that the shop was closed. And that wasn't the only incident. Another time, he was repairing a friend's motorcycle. He wasn't even repairing his own motorcycle, and he was working on his friend's motorcycle, and she came in and she was like, "Oh, babe, why don't you just come and have dinner first, and then you can continue working on a motorcycle later?" And Lai Hock was so angry that she dared to tell him to come and eat dinner that he threw a metal rod at her, and the metal rod actually pierced through the door, so if it actually hit her, she would have been massively injured. And if he was treating his wife like that, maybe I can tell why he didn't want to stay in Madam T's house, in her family home, after basically being a shitty husband. So according to Lim Lai Hock, because he didn't feel safe staying there, he decided to actually stay in a deserted house nearby. And it really says something that he was more willing to stay in a scary, abandoned house as compared to his in-law's house. So after the home in Muar, they kept moving. They moved to Pahok and Kepong. And another thing that Lim Lai Hock actually noticed while he was like on the lam was that his motorcycle wasn't actually too common in Malaysia. So he dismantled it. He threw the engine and the chassis into a river. But he actually kept some other parts around. He said he stored it in a ceiling so that he could maybe like sell it for scrap if he ever needed the money. Now, Lim Lai Hock and Madam T, they stay in Parit Sulong for about 3 months. And during these 3 months is when Madam T, she really starts to get suspicious. She's like, why are we on the run? Why are we staying in all these random places in Malaysia? And that's when he told her his version, like his version of what happened, which probably would not have been great because it would have been like, oh, I've been hooking up with this girl. Or maybe he just excluded it. We don't know. And after the 3 months there, they moved to a farm in Batu Pahat. And the thing is that Lim Lai Hock, he was right to be running because the police was suspicious that he was involved in Hui In's murder. And there were a couple of reasons. First, Hui In was the kind of person that would only hang out with people that she knew. She would never hang out with a stranger. The fact that she went out to the chicken coop in track 13 would mean that she knew the person and the police could have narrowed it down from there. There were also some witnesses that they said that they saw a man driving in the area around the chicken coop, around the hatchery where Hui In had been murdered. So that narrowed it down to specifically a male acquaintance. And I think it would have been probably fair to say that back then, I think there weren't as many like male-female, just like platonic friendships. And if we believe what Lim Lai Hock said, they have been hooking up for many years on and off, and this was a place that they regularly went to meet, then I think it would not have been so difficult to consider that he was a suspect. Now, this is also a case of like excellent police collaboration between the Singapore and the Malaysian police, because he wasn't actually caught by the Singapore police while in Malaysia. He was caught by the Royal Malaysian Police and handed over to the Singapore police at the Woodlands checkpoint. So now we think, why would Lim Lai Hock, after 7 years of having both a relationship and a long-standing affair with Hui In, suddenly decide to kill her? Now, we obviously do not have Hui In's side of the story, but according to Lim Lai Hock, this is what happened. Now, Hui In's family, they were in the process of moving away. They were planning to move from their kampong, from their village, to a HDB flat in Hougang. And just for context, Singapore isn't that big, so like Hougang to Punggol is maybe like 20 minutes apart. And according to Lim Lai Hock, take note, this is all according to him, Huiyin actually went to him and asked for money so that her family could buy furniture for the new home. And again, according to Lim Lai Hock, he didn't want her to think, he was like, I don't want Huiyin to think that I'm not going to help her just because we aren't officially dating anymore. And $2,500 is not a small amount of money, even now. But like back then, it would have been worth even more with inflation and everything. And Lim Lai Hock, he lends her the $2,500. And after that, again, in October 1989, and this would have been when he was married already, and about a year before the murder, he says that once again, Huiyin asked him for money, and this time she asked him for $2,000 in order to set up a plastic business. But instead of giving her $2,000, this time he only gave her $1,800. And once again, we have to take note that this is coming from Lai Hock. But when asked about it, Huiyin's mother actually said that her daughter had enough money in the bank. And the thing is that there were no witnesses. Nobody had seen this transaction loan going down. And for this specific aspect of the case, it's kind of up in the air. And I personally could not find research to confirm or deny otherwise. But I do feel a little bit skeptical. Anyway, around this point of time, I guess Lim Lai Hock, he was coming into his 30s. Maybe he felt like he had to get married. So he's putting all the preparations to get married to Madam T, his long-term girlfriend and soon-to-be wife. And because weddings are expensive, he started to want the money back from Huiyin. He keeps asking her for the money and she keeps saying no. And again, this is his account of the incident. Now, initially, he wanted to get married in either May or June 1990. But because he had no money, he had to postpone the wedding until November, December. And apparently, this is a source of great humiliation for him because his friends made fun of him for postponing the wedding, which is like not really a cool thing to do, but like whatever.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And then so, on the day of the incident, on 12 October, they meet on track 13 in Punggol and they walk over to the hatchery, the chicken coop. And then he asked her for the money once again. And according to him, she said that his mother owed her mother money. So basically saying that regardless, she didn't have to, she shouldn't have to pay him the money back. And apparently this made him so angry. He said that he was so angry when he heard that he slapped her and he scolded her. And she, apparently, after being slapped, pulled up her shirt to her neck so that she was exposing her chest. And according to him, she said that she could claim that he extorted money from her, that she was going to blackmail him. And apparently he got so angry that he unfastened her bra, he took off her bra, he took off her pants, he took off her underwear, and he walked out of the hatchery with her clothes. And according to him, he was like, oh, you know, if I took her clothes, she would have to go home naked and explain to her mother that I did it because she owed me money. Which is still kind of a fucked up thing to do, because I think the more reasonable thing to do would probably be just to go directly to her mom and her dad and be like, hey, your daughter owes me money. That would have been a lot more reasonable than whatever this was. And according to him, when he walked out, apparently Huiyin, she was the one who first threw a brick at him, and then he threw it back at her because retaliation. And then because she had a brick thrown at her, she fell to the ground. But Lim Lai Hock was not done. He took a piece of wood and he swung it at her, then he held her down and continued hitting her with the piece of wood, and her head was covered in blood. Her face was covered in blood. And according to him, it was so gruesome that he covered her face with the chair, with the chair seat, just so that he wouldn't have to see the blood. And initially, Lim Lai Hock actually said that she was still alive when he left her, just that she was unconscious, but still alive. But genuinely, if she was lying in a pool of blood caused by a brick and wood hitting her head and her face, a fair extrapolation is that if you leave her lying there, she would probably not be able to survive without any medical intervention. But no, Lim Lai Hock didn't call the police, he didn't call an ambulance. Instead, after that, he went on the run in Malaysia. What is also interesting is that his wife, Madam T, she also testified for the prosecution, the side against him, and she said that her husband confessed to her about killing Hui In. But at that point of time, there was a little bit of back and forth on whether or not Madam T could actually testify against her husband. But as decreed by apparently some section of the Evidence Act, you can be summoned to testify against your spouse during criminal proceedings. So it's like, you know, totally not worth it to get married so that you guys don't have to testify against each other. But just a fun fact that I guess we're all learning from this case. And so that wasn't the only thing. Madam T was a star witness, but that wasn't the only thing. When he was brought back to Singapore, Lai Hock actually brought the police to Track 10, another area, because remember the hatchery where Hui In was killed was Track 13, and he actually brought the police back to Track 10, where he had hidden her handbag and her shoe. So he purposely took her handbag after attacking her and basically leaving her to die so that she couldn't be easily identified when her body was found. So his defense said that he had intermittent explosive disorder. But it is also said by the prosecution psychiatrist that, yeah, you know what? Even though he's violent, he's still in control when he's being violent, so he can stop himself. And so basically saying that his mental responsibility was not affected by the disorder, that he was capable of understanding what he did, he was capable of self-control. And I think this is like the case with a lot of, I won't just say violent men, but like a lot of violent people, where they will be violent to, say, members of their family, their spouse, but you don't see them losing control when it comes to maybe their boss. You don't see them losing control when it comes to the police or the general public. You don't see them when they're in a rage smashing stuff. You don't see them smashing their own stuff. They're smashing your stuff, or they're smashing like the family stuff. So it's like you can see the self-control there, and then after that they blame it on like explosive rage. You know, just saying as a general thing, not as like part of this case. Lim Lai Hock was found guilty after a 3-week trial, and he was sentenced to the mandatory death sentence, which is still kind of a thing but a lot more strict back then. It is also said that a female member of the audience actually gave a thumbs up at the judgment, which I thought was like a little bit strange. And, you know, it's kind of dark and disrespectful because like a man has just been sentenced to death, but he also did horrible things, and it seems, and he seems like an awful, violent person. So I don't really know how I feel about the audience member being like, thumbs up. Lim Lai Hock, he tries to appeal, but about 2 years later in 1995, he loses his appeal. And I was not able to find the exact date of his execution, but I guess it would be fair to assume that it has already happened. I think it has been a while since we covered specifically a Singapore case, but after doing this particular case, I feel kind of strange because, you know, Singapore is so small, and it's very likely that, you know, people who are related to the case in some way or another might just come across it, and it just feels very strange, you know? Anyway, but still, if you have any family secrets that you would like me to research, do drop me a line at A Briefcase Podcast on Instagram. And do remember to join us next week for another brief case.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.